Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. This week, I try to steer away from gloom and doom and look at consumer electronics, specifically cell phones. Ultimately, I don't succeed in steering away from gloom and doom, but I hope you'll enjoy my valiant, if unsuccessful, effort. Stay tuned. For weeks, I've been thinking that the show could use some lightening up. For weeks, it's been endless war, the destruction of the American economy, conspiracy by the government, the financiers, and the media to turn the American working people into peons without constitutional rights, and the perfidy of that wolf in sheep's clothing, that willing servant of big finance, big oil, and the military-industrial complex, President Barack H. Obama. See how good I am at lightening up? Listen, I am trying. How about consumer electronics? That's a subject that offers some amusing observations. Like, in my modest size house are no fewer than 7 telephones. 2 are connected by wire, 1 is a cell phone that's almost never used, and 4, including 1 fax phone, are in a box somewhere in the basement. It's a long story. And yes, you heard right. The Doust family owns 0.3 cell phones per person, not the normal 1.5. Jonathan must have been the only kid in 7th grade last year without his own cell. In contrast with the scarcity of cell phones, our 3-person household has no fewer than 3 laptop computers, none of which we had to pay for. 2 of them are hand-me-downs from a corporate entity that outgrew one and didn't want to bother fixing the other. Fixing it required nothing more than reformatting the hard disk and letting the computer reinstall all its original software automatically. So far, so good. When my floor-standing computer died, I just grabbed this very laptop. For months, I've been producing this show on this little machine, which was made in 2002 and has a resale value, judging by eBay, of about $125. When I first touched a computer, people did not have 3 of them hanging around their house, keeping the 7 telephones company. Probably only MIT and the Pentagon had 3 of them. This was 1967, and the computer and its necessary peripherals and accessories filled half of a room. The key punch machine alone was the size of 2 spinet pianos. Amazingly, the model number just flashed into my mind after 45 years. It was the IBM 1620. Well headed towards obsolescence even in 1967. There's an article on it in Wikipedia, plus a picture of the console. And if you have no idea what a console and a key punch machine were, believe me, you're better off. Ah, youth. So consumer electronics sounded like a nice, fun, silly topic without any appreciable gloom and doom. Cell phones especially. What could be more amusing than a supermarket shopper engaged in earnest conversation with his mate about whether to purchase Keebler or else Nabisco saltines? Or the teenaged Einstein who smashes his dad's Hummer while attempting to drive, send a text message on his cell, and chew gum simultaneously? Smashed Hummers remind me of train wrecks, which remind me of the Sunday New York Times Week in Review section. I try not to look at it, but it's usually so ghastly I can't resist gawking. And there, on June 27, on page 11, were 2 op-ed columns on cell phones. Gloom by Maureen Dowd and Doom by Nicholas Kristof. Maureen says that the problem with cell phones is that they irradiate your brain. Nicholas says the problem with cell phones is that 5.5 million people in the Congo have died in resource wars to control the mines that produce the minerals that the cell phones and our family's 3 computers need. See, I try really, really hard to get away from gloom and doom, and what happens? Reality refuses to cooperate. Let's start with a bit of Kristof and the human horrors that lie behind the gold, tin, tungsten, tantalum, and coltan in your cell phone, and computer, and digital camera, and BlackBerry, and PlayStation, TV, radio, GPS, and probably even toaster. Then, if time permits, we'll look at frying your brains with radio transmissions from your cell phone. And even if you don't use a cell phone, everything else is getting fried anyway by the cell phone towers, and the Wi-Fi hotspots, and, apparently worst of all, WiMAX hotspots. might as well just curl up inside your microwave oven. At least it's warm in winter. But first, onto the Congo and into the heart of darkness. Let's hear American filmmaker Lisa F. Jackson very briefly set the stage. Then we'll go on to Nicholas Kristof. New World Notes first broadcast these words and others by Lisa Jackson back in April 2008 in a show titled Women, War, and Violence.
In modern warfare, civilians are intentionally targeted. At the turn of the century, 90% of the casualties were military, and now 90% of the casualties are civilian. And a huge number of those are women and girls who are not killed. They are raped, and they are invisible statistics in modern conflict. Well, the Democratic Republic of Congo, we probably remember better as Zaire, but it was a Belgian colony in the late 1800s, and it was completely pillaged by King Leopold, who just sacked the country, taking out rubber and ivory and killing half the native population. There are photographs from that era that show guys in pith helmets holding baskets full of hands, because people, you know, if you didn't meet your quota for the rubber barons, your hands were amputated. So it has a huge, long history of just being sacked and desecrated by the First World. It's an incredibly rich country. It's bordered by 9 different countries, all of whom variously, Angola, Rwanda, Burundi, Sudan, have all come across the borders to pillage its incredible resources, which include minerals, petroleum, diamonds, and a mineral called coltan, which has become my sort of pet issue. Coltan is a mineral that without which you cannot make a Sony PlayStation, a remote control, a laptop computer, or a cell phone. And it can be argued that there is the blood of Congolese women on your cell phone. So what is going on now, particularly in eastern Congo, is a resource war, where in the last 10 or 12 years, over 5 million people have died. And when you look at that number, it's 10 Darfurs have happened in the Congo. But it's a war in slow motion. It's an invisible war that has not gotten the media attention that Darfur has. I'm not quite sure why that is. Maybe Darfur is, you know, you can attach the term genocide to Darfur, and a lot of people get all excited, and attach George Clooney, and that, you know, triples the excitement. But nobody yet is really talking about what's going on in Congo and the First World's complicity in what is going on in Congo. So I chose to tell the story of that poor, conflict-racked country through the voices of its women.
Now here's Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times, Sunday, June 27. Death by gadget. Blood diamonds have faded away, but we may now be carrying blood phones. An ugly paradox of the 21st century is that some of our elegant symbols of modernity, smartphones, laptops, and digital cameras, are built from minerals that seem to be fueling mass slaughter and rape in Congo. I've never reported on a war more barbaric than Congo's, and it haunts me. In Congo, I've seen women who have been mutilated, children who have been forced to eat their parents' flesh, girls who have been subjected to rapes that destroyed their insides. Warlords finance their predations in part through the sale of mineral ore containing tantalum, tungsten, tin, and gold. For example, tantalum from Congo is used to make electrical capacitors that go into phones, computers, and gaming devices. Electronics manufacturers have tried to hush all this up, Kristof continues. They want you to look at a gadget and think sleek, not blood. Yet now there's a grassroots movement pressuring companies to keep these conflict minerals out of high-tech supply chains. Using Facebook and YouTube, activists are harassing companies like Apple, Intel, and Research in Motion, which makes the BlackBerry, to get them to lean on their suppliers and ensure the use of, say, Australian tantalum rather than tantalum peddled by a Congolese militia. A humorous new video taunting Apple and PC consumers alike goes online this weekend on YouTube, which hopes that it will go viral. Put together by a group of Hollywood actors, it's a spoof on the famous "I'm a Mac, I'm a PC" ad, and suggests that both are sometimes built from conflict minerals. Guess we have some things in common after all, Mac admits. Let's set Kristof aside for a minute and listen to that ad parody. Do you know the ad series? I didn't, since I don't watch TV, but I found dozens of these ads on YouTube, and they are kind of clever. Two men stand in front of a white backdrop. The one on the right says, "Hi, I'm a Mac." Then the one on the left says, "And I'm a PC." Mac is young, hip, attractive, dressed casually. He looks like the young Steve Jobs. PC wears a business suit. He's middle-aged, plump, and looks much like Bill Gates. They have some witty dialogue in which PC always ends up looking foolish. The whole thing lasts 30 seconds. Let's listen to a couple of real ads.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC. Hey, Mac, did you hear the good news?
Right.
Windows 7 is out, and it's not going to have any of the problems my last operating system had. Trust me.
I feel like I've heard this before, PC.
What? Windows Vista's here, and it's not going to have any of the problems that Windows XP had. It's not going to have any of the problems that Windows ME had. It's not going to have any of the problems that Windows 98 had. It's not going to have any of the problems Windows 95 had. It's not going to have any of the problems Windows 2 had. Trust me. This time it's going to be different. Trust me.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
Zoom tight. You okay?
No, I'm not okay. I have that virus that's going around.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, you better stay back. This one's a doozy.
That's okay. I'll be fine.
No, do not be a hero. Last year, there were 114,000 known viruses for PCs.
PCs, not Macs. So, you just grab this
one. I think I got a crash.
Hey, if you feel like that'll help, good.
Pretty cool. And I'm a PC user, incidentally. Now, here's the parody ad on conflict minerals that Christoph was describing. Here, PC does most of the talking.
Hi, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
Hey, PC, what do you have in your pockets?
Just a couple pieces of... Let's see. Here's some tin. And this is called tantalum. And this is tungsten. I call them the three T's. Here's some gold. Gotta have gold. And you know what's funny? A lot of this stuff comes all the way from the Congo, where it's been fueling the deadliest conflict in the world since World War II. 5 million killed in the past 10 years. Hundreds of thousands of women and girls raped. Horrible stuff. Wish you hadn't asked.
So these are the so-called conflict minerals. Our militias use violence to control mines and trading routes and then make hundreds of millions selling these minerals to electronics companies.
Yeah, that's about right. By the way, what's with your pockets?
just some conflict minerals. Guess we have some things in common after all.
We want electronics companies to clean up their supply chains, and we as consumers can make this happen. Tell them to make their products conflict-free. Go to www.raisehopeforcongo.org. Thank you.
Finally, a few more words by Nicholas Christoph from his recent New York Times column. There is no magic bullet solution to peace in Congo, notes David Sullivan of the Enough Project, but this is one of the drivers of the conflict. The economics of the war should be addressed to resolve it. We may be able to undercut some of the world's most brutal militias simply by making it clear to the electronics manufacturers that we don't want our beloved gadgets to enrich sadistic gunmen. No phone or tablet computer can be considered cool if it may be helping perpetuate one of the most brutal wars on the planet. Now speaking in my own voice, a handful of organizations are working to get consumers to pressure electronics companies to monitor their supply chains and demonstrate that their gadgets contain tungsten, tantalum, tin, and gold that come from places other than the Congo. For some reason, they never mention coltan, also essential to cell phones. The reason may possibly be that few countries other than Congo have any coltan to sell. I don't know. Last year, one of the concerned organizations, in conjunction with YouTube, held a contest. They're looking for a 60-second video announcement urging consumers to demand that companies source only so-called conflict-free minerals. Some entries in this contest were very nice, but as they depended on visuals and captions, not so good for radio. However, the contest winner works pretty well. The first sound you'll hear is a clamshell phone snapping shut. Here it comes.
Look, when you use your cell phone, you activate the cries of a million children working through the night, mining the ore that burns to tin, and that's exactly where this story begins. With a child in a cave, in the dark, being brave, surviving, hardly living, serving as a slave. Digging minerals from the earth that always gives birth to a chain of events that never really ends. Cause at the heart of it all, there's an evil, strong and tall, with a gun in hand and a wicked plan to rape women and earth of all their worth so they can sell their greed in what we need. It's right here, right now, today, hiding inside the price we pay for the brand new phone that says we don't know or we don't care that death and despair and war are what provide the means to have our well-connected lives. It's time we stop supporting the unethical exporting of tungsten, tantalum, and tin. It's time for death to lose and life to win. So share what you know. We are consuming the Congo.
Tantalum has an interesting name. It comes from a figure in Greek mythology, as does our word tantalize. Do you find the latest iPhone or iPod or iPad or i-whatever tantalizing? I'm sure you'd find the life of a Congolese miner considerably less tantalizing. We've heard a couple TV commercial-length recaps of the problem. In writing, each proposed a solution. Sign a petition telling manufacturers you want supply chain auditing and no conflict minerals, and back it up in your purchasing decisions. By the way, if you want to sign such a petition, you can do so at www.raisehopeforcongo.org. Four is spelled out, F-O-R, raisehopeforcongo.org. That website is part of the Change Project. This is the group behind the contest and behind the I'm a Mac parody. The most visible mover behind the Change Project is John Prendergast. He's a former diplomat and longtime anti-genocide crusader. The 60-second video spots were nicely done, but necessarily superficial. Let's hear John Prendergast giving a more substantial explanation of what's going on. Following that, I'm going to propose a couple solutions that no one else dares to mention.
Hey, I'm John Prendergast of the Enough Project. I've been working on conflicts and in conflict zones in Africa for 25 years now. But I've never seen anything like the human devastation in eastern Congo. The violence there is worse than anywhere else in the world, the deadliest conflict in the world since World War II. And the highest rates of sexual violence in the entire world. It is the most dangerous place to be a woman or a girl. And the direct connection between our consumer appetites and the violence in eastern Congo is a result of this, your cell phone. Basically, there are four minerals that come from the Congo that are in every one of our electronics products. Gold and what we call the three T's, tantalum, tin, and tungsten. Tantalum stores electricity in your phone. If you didn't have tantalum in your phone, tungsten makes your cell phone vibrate. And tin is used as a solder on circuit board. Congo has a lot of tin. Gold is used to coat the wiring, and it's the highest value metal inside every cell phone and laptop.
Armed groups make millions each year trading these minerals. Guess what they buy? Pistols, grenades, rifles.
That's why we call them conflict minerals. So here's how minerals in the Congo get from the mine to your mobile phone. So basically, the armed groups in eastern Congo act like a mafia. The mines themselves are controlled and taxed by these armed groups, by these militias. And then the smuggling routes, as they're smuggled across the borders to neighboring countries, particularly Uganda and Rwanda, those smuggling points are all controlled by these armed groups. All these places, they're making huge amounts of money by taxing and stealing the resources and smuggling them out of the country illegally. And the tool of choice, the human rights violation of choice of the militias and armed groups in the Congo is rape, in order to intimidate populations and punish populations for supporting other groups.
When the minerals are smuggled out of Africa, they head to Asia, to smelting companies in Thailand, Malaysia, China, and India to be refined. Here, Congo's minerals get mixed together with other minerals from around the world, making them difficult but not impossible to trace. Finally, the three T's in gold are processed into components, and they end up all over the world in the products we know and love: cell phones, BlackBerries, laptops, iPods, video game systems, and digital cameras.
So that's all the bad news. The good news is, because we have a direct role in fueling the violence, as innocent and inadvertent as it might be, we actually have a role in bringing it to an end. The first thing we need to do is to create a demand, a consumer demand for conflict-free products. We need to get in touch with our cell phone manufacturers and our laptop companies and tell them we want conflict-free products. After 5.5 million deaths in eastern Congo, when is enough enough? We can all help end the war in the Congo. It's your call.
Now, as a preface to a few suggestions of my own, let's hear just a small part of another public service spot on conflict minerals. This one is titled, Young Hollywood Speaks Up for Congo. It starts out with a collage of people chatting on their cell phones.
Well, if you want to come over and pick
up,
that's
good.
Fine.
I should be there right soon.
I'll be there.
Hey, it's so nice to see you.
Yeah. Let me mention you out there, okay?
Chicken parmesan.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
That's for me.
Oh, what would we do without these things? They are an essential part of our lives.
Now, this touches on some important issues. Is a cell phone an essential part of your life? If so, should it be? When I worked in an office building, I'd noticed that every evening, almost everybody was making a phone call while driving out of the parking lot. What were they saying? I imagine, Harry, I'm heading home now. Please put the chicken parmesan in the oven at 5:30. She could have said that 5 minutes beforehand on the phone on her desk. Cell phones are useful from time to time, and I've confessed that my family does own one. One, which gets used for 5 or 10 minutes a month. It's okay, it's a pay-per-minute affair, so we're not paying hundreds of dollars in fees a year for an hour's use. Does each household member need his own cell phone? Apparently not. Maybe America could buy fewer of the things. Maybe we could use them less, so they'd last longer without breaking and having to be replaced. Here's the most unspeakable idea of all. Suppose you have an old cell phone. It's nothing fancy. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles. It doesn't have a built-in video camera or a 60-key QWERTY keyboard. And it won't let you read your email while you're driving. Now, I know I'm pushing it here, but suppose you kept your old one. Suppose you didn't toss it in your junk drawer or in a landfill and upgrade to the latest, sleekest, sexiest new model that's just out. Would your life be any less pleasant? How often do you really, really need to read your email now and no computer is available? Trust me, all those Nigerian financial opportunities and discounts on Viagra will still be available by the time you're next able to get to a computer. How about making do with what we have? How about seeing if we can get another couple years' use out of that gizmo, rather than chucking it and buying a fancier one as soon as the chrome plating begins to rub off the plastic? And when it does finally wear out or break, how about seeing how long we can get by without buying another? During World War II, this kind of talk on the home front would have seemed entirely normal and patriotic. Janis Joplin's ironic song of the 60s shows how far we had regressed even by then, and we've regressed even further since. We'll hear that song in a few seconds. At my classic and antique 2002 IBM ThinkPad T41 computer, somewhere east of the river, this is Kenneth Doust, hoping you'll tune in again next week. Get more information, plus pretty pictures, plus great links, plus an archive of almost all installments at the show's website. That's newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Free weekly email newsletter on request, and you'll find the email address to make that request on the website. Once again, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. New World Notes' base station is WWUH-FM in West Hartford, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Do you need that new iPhone or iPad or iPod or notebook computer running Windows 7? Janis Joplin suggests an answer. I'll get to my non-carborundum and ciao.
I like to do a song of great social and political import. It goes like this. Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? Oh Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Dialing $4 is trying to find me. I wait for delivery each day until 3. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Oh Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? I'm counting on you, Lord. Please don't let me down. Prove that you love me and buy the next round. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? Everybody, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime, no help from my friends. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? That's it.